Support by Anchorage, Alaska. From the Coastal Trail to Kincaid Park, Flattop, Powerline Pass, and more. There are plenty of places for a weekend hike or an exciting mountain biking excursion. Exploring your home state is the COVID-safe way to enjoy the summer.
Welcome to Native America Calling. From Albuquerque, I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The spill of toxic waste from the Gold King Mine in Colorado 6 years ago flowed downstream in the Animas and San Juan Rivers. Farmers, ranchers, and residents worried about contamination from heavy metals and other pollutants. Now, officials say the risks from the spill are low, but concern and some legal battles continue. We'll check back in with people who continue to monitor the impacts of the spill. Our conversation starts right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Tripp Krause in for Antonia Gonzalez. For decades, members of the Passamaquoddy tribe in Maine have complained about the color, smell, and excess contaminants in their water. But as Robbie Feinberg reports, tribal leaders are hoping new efforts could offer a solution.
For decades, Plantawiz Dana and other Passamaquoddy tribal members say they've had to purchase bottled water or use this spring, 10 miles from the reservation, in order to access clean water for drinking and cooking.
Growing up, my parents always said, don't drink the water, the water's not good for you. And so I have a childhood memory of always looking for different well places to go to, and we would go and fill our jugs and bring them home, and that was always a rule in my house. My parents would never drink the water.
The issue is the tribe's water source, a nearby lake. The water is full of organic matter, such as leaves, and requires substantial treatment. Public officials point to water samples showing the water is safe, but several recent results show the water has exceeded federal limits on trihalomethanes. Those are contaminants resulting from the disinfection process that federal authorities say may increase cancer risk and liver and kidney problems. The tribe has been looking at different solutions for years, including partnering with the state on a new carbon filtration system at the local water district. But Chief Maggie Dana says the tribe is pushing for changes to the state's laws governing tribal sovereignty, which she says would make it easier for the tribe to acquire lands and use them as a water source. For National Native News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
The Bureau of Land Management opened a 30-day public comment period for a controversial mining project in an area about 1 mile from California's Death Valley National Park. About 170 miles north of Los Angeles, Canadian junior mining company K2 Gold proposes to collect samples for gold analysis in part of an area known as the Conglomerate Mesa. Kathy Bancroft is the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer for the Lone Pine Paiute Shoshone Reservation.
So now they're applying for huge permit. They're applying to put roads in and dig 120 new sites, new wells, or drill holes to see what else they can find up there.
Opponents of the mine say the project could do harm to the wilderness, public lands, and cultural sites of the Tumbisha Shoshone and the Paiute Shoshone. Bancroft worries that the move to green energy will put a larger demand on mining metals for things like car batteries.
So we have people in Congress that just think that mining, we got to just be able to open up a lot more mines without thinking of the consequences. You're trying to do a green energy project, yet you're going to open it up to destroy millions of acres of public land and the water supplies, because mining takes a huge amount of water.
The public has until August 30th to submit comments, which can be done through the Bureau of Land Management's website. The Public Health Authority for the Umatilla Reservation is recommending universal mask use in public indoor settings throughout the reservation. Yellowhawk Tribal Health Center announced the move in response to growing numbers of COVID-19 cases. The Crow Tribe will bring 3 misdemeanor charges against a Bureau of Indian Affairs agent involved in a traffic stop in Lodge Grass, Montana, that resulted in one man's injuries. According to KULR8 TV, the complaint filed in Crow Tribal Court alleges that on July 20th, the canine handler was working for the BIA and responded as a backup officer to a call in Lodge Grass. The complaint continues to allege that during the stop, the agent deployed the dog while the victim was already on the ground and struggled to control his canine. The three charges of aggravated assault, criminal endangerment, and negligent endangerment are all misdemeanors, the highest level of charges available in tribal court. For National Native News, I'm Tripp Krause.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Support by the Sanoski Chambers Law Firm, championing tribal sovereignty and defending Native American rights since 1976, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. When it first happened, the spill from the Gold King mine in Colorado sent a yellow plume along the Animas and San Juan rivers. Farmers on the Navajo Nation who rely on the rivers to irrigate their crops or water livestock were forced to shut down because they couldn't risk contaminating their land or animals with heavy metals or other contaminants. The yellow plume is long gone, but many people on the river remain weary of what's been left behind. Earlier this year, the Navajo Nation reached a legal settlement with mine owners to offset cleanup costs. Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez said the settlement is just the beginning. A lawsuit against the EPA has yet to be resolved. We're taking a look back today on the anniversary, and we're hearing from some community members about what life's been like since then. And we also want to hear from you. Do you remember when this happened? Do you remember seeing the pictures that were all over national news? Or maybe there's an environmental disaster that happened in your community. Join the conversation. Our phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we have three guests today joining us from New Mexico, Estella Benally, and she's a local farmer on the San Juan River. And also Duane Chiliazzi, he's a past Shiprock chapter president. And from Albuquerque is Maddie Hayden, and she's the director of communications at the New Mexico Environment Department. And I wanted to start off the hour by taking a look back. National Native News traveled to the area shortly after the spill, and we talked to a number of community members in the Shiprock area. And here's a look back at how the devastation caused to one farmer. Communities in the Shiprock area of the Northern Agency of the Navajo Reservation in New Mexico were hit hard by the recent Gold King mine waste spill. The area is well known for the towering volcanic rock formation Shiprock, which can be seen for miles in all directions, including from farms along the San Juan River. Farmers there are preparing for the worst, yet counting their blessings, such as recent rain. This after irrigation was shut off for more than a week on this day last week when farmer Sherelle Mesa looked at crops while driving a Jeep.
Squash is starting to look like it's dying because there's no water right there.
The farm has been in her family for about six generations. Her grandmother, grandfather, aunts, and other family have long grown and sold produce. Going down a bumpy road, she looks at thousands of plants, many wilting.
On the other side of this, there are my melons and I have three rows of corn over there.
Stopping, then getting out of the vehicle, she proceeds down a thick path of bushes, weeds, and trees to the river. After a few minutes, she stands on the bank and describes how water gets to her farm.
It comes in from the hogback. It's all gravity flow. It's an inlet about 2 miles up the road is where it comes in. I think it's 163 cubic feet per second of water we're supposed to be getting through there. If we go over that water, the government fines us, the Navajo tribe, for going over a little bit. But yet we're losing all that water we'll never get back.
And that water is desperately needed as the sun beats down on this 90-plus degree day. Getting back into the Jeep, she points to a pile of wood intended to be used to make steamed corn. But that's in jeopardy now. now that crops are starting to die.
I don't think my corn's going to make it.
Farmers sell their harvest along New Mexico highways, including between the border town of Farmington to Shiprock, about a 30-minute drive. Sherelle's farm and produce stand are along the highway in the community of Hogback. In her community, people traveled to the chapter house, the administrative and meeting place, to fill water tanks. Sherelle says the allowance that day was 100 gallons, which means for her, maybe just half a row gets watered, all by hand. The rows are about 800 to 900 feet long. The goods produced here are a staple, from squash for lamb stew, corn for kneel-down bread, to pollen used for prayer.
We do so much with corn. Corn has hundreds and hundreds of things they do with it here.
The vast Navajo Reservation includes communities in Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico. People from all over come to this area to buy native foods, especially during tribal fair time. Sherelle says after the spill, there was a lack of communication and much confusion. At Sherelle Mesa's produce stand along the highway, she looks at what's left to sell. A few buckets full, an ice chest full, and two tables lined with bright yellow and green squash.
If there's no water, we can't plant. There's no farmers. The water's gone. There's no life.
Are you angry at all?
Yeah, I'm really angry because we're supposed to be getting that water. These people here are all supposed to have that water. This mine ruined it.
Farmers have accepted some losses and hold hope for other crops. On August 5th, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency spilled waste near Silverton, Colorado, which flowed down the river, including past Sherelle's farm. The Navajo Nation Emergency Response Team has been working around the clock to address safety and health concerns and to help Navajo farmers and ranchers who rely on the San Juan River. The EPA says it continues to work with the tribe, which has identified 13 locations for water distribution.
And that was just one of the many stories that we covered during that time. That was back in 2015, just days after the spill. That was one farmer talking about the devastation. And this hour, we're going to be taking a look back at the spill's devastation. We have three guests joining us, and the phone lines are open. We invite you to call in. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we definitely want to hear from our guests, but we have Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez, who called in, and he's on the phone. He's from Hard Rock, or he's joining us from Hard Rock, Arizona. Welcome to Native America Calling, President Nez, and just hearing that story and listening to one of the farmers, the devastation. What were your thoughts?
Well, Antonio, thank you for having us on the call. Back in on August 5th, 2015, then President Russell Begay and I, the Vice President, heard about the blowout of the Gold King mine near Silverton, Colorado. And as the plume started going downstream, and you could see that there was a lot of contaminants coming down the river, especially when it hit the San Juan River. So at that time, President Gay and I, we visited the place where the blowout occurred, north of Silverton, Colorado, not knowing at the time how much devastation and how much havoc that would have on all of us in that whole area, including the Navajo Nation up to this point. And I appreciate the overview of what occurred. Now, for the Navajo Nation, an update is that this case involves claims by the Navajo Nation, New Mexico, Utah, hundreds of private plaintiffs, including approximately 300 Navajo plaintiffs, to recover damages resulting from the spill that occurred. And that spill sent more than 3 million gallons of toxic mine waste downstream to the nation's territories. Defendants include the U.S. EPA, US EPA contractors and mining companies. You know, this is public information. The nation submitted a claim to the federal government asserting $3.78 million in reimbursed response costs and $159 million in additional tort damages. This is a critical litigation aimed at addressing the environmental, cultural, and spiritual harms caused by this disaster. Since the case has been filed, the nation has defeated motions to dismiss filed by all defendants. Fact discovery closed earlier this year, and expert discovery is currently ongoing. Earlier this year, too, the Navajo Nation recovered $10 million from the mining company defendants in mediation. DOJ and Navajo Nation EPA are hoping to have those funds and any other settlement or judgments allocated to the Navajo Nation EPA toward a San Juan River mitigation fund so that the funding goes to the purpose of the litigation and the communities and people affected ultimately benefit. Claims against US EPA and its contractors remain pending. We are preparing for trial and we'll continue to work diligently to hold the federal government, US EPA, and other contractors accountable. And so, Antonio, that's where we're at this point in time. And it has brought some hardship and some emotional damage to those folks that you'll hear from today. But the Navajo Nation is continuing to be engaged and to hold people accountable and to possibly assist in healing our people from this immense disaster that occurred in 2015. And keep in mind, there are other mines up in those mountains that are ready to blow as well. So there needs to be more attention on that region. And I know some of these mine companies are not there anymore, but it is a responsibility of the federal government through the US EPA. Thank you.
Thank you so much, President Nez, calling in and giving us an update on some of the litigation that's going on involving the Gold King Mine waste spill that devastated farmers and ranchers and community members in the Four Corners region. There's also the Ute tribe there, and so there are people who were impacted by businesses and tourism. There was a lot of moving parts as well in that area. And today we're taking a look back at the Gold King the waste spill that happened, and we have some guests and we want to hear from them, and we're going to get to some of that in this hour. And we also want to hear from you. We have to take a short break, but our phone number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We have a lot to talk about this hour, so we'll be right back.
Families are heading out on late summer vacations and sightseeing adventures. Native businesses and tribal destinations have long been popular tourism spots. As the COVID-19 pandemic changes, we'll check in with tourism experts about how they're adjusting and what's on the horizon. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. We're getting updates on the lasting environmental and legal issues from the Gold King Mine waste spill 6 years ago today. Were you impacted? We want to hear from you. We have three guests on the line. Also, our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And the phone lines are open, so give us a call. I want to welcome back our guests, Maddie Hayden, Stella Benally, and Dwayne Chiliazzi. Thank you for joining us. And Chile, we just heard from Navajo Nation president, and we also heard a story that National Native News did shortly after this spill. Take us back to that day and your thoughts on what happened.
Yes, good morning. Pleased to be on the program. We were having a meeting up in Upper Fruitland Chapter on the 5th of August 2016. And we were meeting on the 6th. We did not know, we did not hear of the spill until about at least 24 hours later. And when we did, understand or recognize the impact that it would have, and only until we began having community meetings and getting reports from the state engineer, some of the tribal programs, other people along the river, did we begin to understand the the major impact that this would have on our communities. So it was a very surreal situation to see many of our community members basically in shock, in anger. Many of our elders were devastated, not only because of the what water means to us in terms of irrigation and our water supply, but the impact on the cultural and spiritual significance of the river. Our elders felt those impacts, so it was a really troubling time for us. But as we got into the response efforts, it was we were inundated. Our community was inundated by emergency response people, officials from every affected jurisdiction. And even we had a director, the director of EPA there in Shiprock. Emergency command posts were set up, and it was just a really hectic time for us. The water was turned off there, or irrigation water was turned off, I believe, on August the 7th. And we did not turn the water back on for the rest of the season, and we were right in the midst of our harvest, of our growing season. We had melons on the vine, and corn were getting up as tall as 5 feet or so. So, you know, our crops were really maturing, and the water was turned off, and it just really hit us very hard. You know, it was just devastating.
And there was a lot of, also, like you mentioned, cultural and spiritual loss, because water is sacred to Navajo people and tribes across the country. And also just with water issues that currently are today on the Navajo Nation. And Stella, for you, hearing from you know, the story that we played from a farmer, and also just, you know, looking back at this incident, what were your initial thoughts?
Yes, and thank you for having me on the program. Yes, it was really devastating for us farmers, because we rely on our farm for food and produce, and that's our food for the coming winter, like as far as squash, corn, radish, and all the other fruit vegetables that we grow. So it was devastating that, you know, we lost a lot of our food during that season, and as well as alfalfa for our cattle, our horses, our sheep, that, you know, it was, we just barely planted it, and that was just our second watering of alfalfa, And it never happened because of all the lice spill that the water turned yellowish. I just had figured that it was going to clear up right away, but it never did. We couldn't irrigate. We couldn't get water on a 20-acre farm that I have. I couldn't get water. I had to take my horses back to my home and give them water, and I had to sell some of my cattle because I didn't have enough to give them water. So, and these were passed on from my grandparents, you know, that I wanted to keep in the family and just watch them grow, especially the sheep. So I had to get rid of them and minimize it so I can have enough water to water them back at home. Either that or I had to go home and get some water tanks and water them on the farm. So it was very devastating. We lost a lot of financial help too, as well as, you know, we used to sell some of the vegetable to people that come to the Northern Agency that, you know, that we sell our corn and nail down bread and roasted corn and things like that. And people were afraid to buy it because they said it's contaminated and they didn't want to buy it. So people didn't trust us to buy anything for us, as you know, that what we had. So you know, and this was the financial help so we can pay back our water bill, and you know, so that was a loss, and we just had to do something else, you know, like sell our cattle and, you know, make sure that our water's up to par, that we, you know, we pay for it yearly. So, yes, it was very devastating. Through the ordeal, I lost my uncle, and he figured it was going to be better, but it never did. So it was very devastating for some elderlies because, you know, this is a shock to us, and, you know, water is life. You know, we use water for everything, you know, on a daily basis. You know, we drink 4 to 6 bottles of water, and, you know, and that most of that went to our crops and our alfalfa for what we had. But it just never happened. So I'm still a little bit hesitant to use the water. I haven't planted. I just, you know, have a small garden that I, you know, I use, but I still haven't redone my alfalfa yet. And all of my cattle are all gone. So, yes, it was very devastating.
Well, thank you, Stella, so much for sharing that. And I just, you know, my good thoughts to you and your family. And it's definitely was a trying time for people. And hopefully the recovery is getting there 6 years later to a lot of people in the region. And Chile, I wanted to ask you about the preparedness. Was the area, was the tribe, were people at the time prepared for such a natural such a disaster as this?
In terms of immediate response, we didn't see that from the Navajo Nation. The immediate response that we saw came from EPA and its some of its departments, but we were very dissatisfied with part of that response in terms of where EPA did contract for some major water haulers to come in. They set up big tanks, but it turned out that the company that was hired was a fracking operations water supplier people, and they set up tanks that were that had petroleum in them. So we just basically chased them out of town, and EPA was very much a bad guy at the time. Navajo Nation did come in with their emergency command center, and they did reasonably well, but it was just so chaotic that and so much to cover that they were almost overwhelmed. Sometime later, the BIA did come in, and I felt that they had a very professional response apparatus and ability. So that's our experience with the response elements of this ecological disaster.
And do you think now that communities and even individuals and the tribe are now prepared if there is such another similar disaster?
You know, when the heavy runoff happens from the mountains, you know, we understand that there is heavy metals that are contained in that. And we know that heavy metals have remained at the bottom of the river, and when there's very heavy runoff, the heavy metals will get agitated and come to the surface. But we as individual farmers, obviously, we have limited resources. And the irrigation canal systems are controlled by the Navajo Nation. So if anything like this were to occur again, you know, we would just obviously have to rely on the government, our own tribal government, the BIA and the federal government. So, and I'm just hopeful that, that they're better prepared for the next occurrence.
And I know you're going to be jumping off the line here in a few minutes to continue your day. And I want to thank you for being here and talking about this and looking back at the past and looking toward the future. What are your thoughts about moving on now from this event and what you hope for?
You know, the most, the best solution to this concern is if we were to get a water supply for our irrigation off of the San Juan River, upriver from the confluence with the Animas, because we did learn that the heavy metals and other contaminants are in the river every year. It's not anything that that happens, you know, it's just stuff that happens every year. Just because, as President Nez said, that there are 2,000 mines up in southern Colorado that that many are abandoned, and the federal government is to be held at fault because it's allowed the companies to just dig their mine and take the resources and just walk away. There's been no effort by the federal government to make the companies responsible for cleanup. And this goes back to the 1882 Mining Act law. And because the Congress and the federal government has failed to rescind that law or make it better, you know, we hold the federal government to be absolutely also responsible for these things that happen to us.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and definitely a look at the accountability and what needs to happen and what needs to go forth and looking into the future, especially for people in that area. Dwayne Chiliazzi, thank you so much for joining us here today on Native America Calling.
Thank you.
And I'd like to welcome in now Maddie Hayden. You're with the New Mexico Environmental Department. What was the impact or the response, I guess, when this first happened?
Hi, thanks, Antonia. It's great to be on, and I'm really honored to speak alongside President Nez, Stella, and Chile. So we were actually notified, not by the EPA initially when this when this occurred. We were notified by a water system in the Southern Ute tribe. And so we were able to immediately contact drinking water systems along the river and advise them to shut off their intakes from the river. And we immediately sent people out to start sampling the water and facilitating drinking water if it was needed. You know, I certainly want to echo what others have said, that, you know, the emergency is over, but this continues to affect communities in New Mexico, and we continue to prioritize holding those responsible accountable and helping these communities recover and heal, as well as the river.
And we definitely want to talk a little bit more about long-lasting environmental impacts and looking at maybe there's some impacts in your tribal community across the country where this has happened before, something similar. We want to hear from you. Our phone lines are open. Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And maybe you're a water protector out there and you remember this. There's a lot of issues going on across Indian country with movements, especially at the grassroots level, to address water and protect water. There's a lot of people working on various levels that are concerned about what's going on today. So we want to hear from you. We have some guests joining us today. We're talking this hour about the Gold King Mine waste spill, which happened in 2015. Maybe you remember seeing it on national television. This made headlines across the country, turning the water a different color and this big massive plume going downstream. So give us a call. Our phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back and we want to get to some more callers and hear from our guests.
Smoking gave me COPD, which makes it harder and harder for me to breathe. I have a tip for you. If your doctor gives you 5 years to live, spend it talking with your grandchildren. Explain to them that your grandpa's not going to be around anymore to share his wisdom and his love. I haven't figured out how to do that yet. I'm running out of time.
COPD makes it harder and harder to breathe and can cause death. You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Antonia Gonzalez, and today we're taking a look back at the Gold King Mine waste spill that impacted people in the Four Corners region. We want to hear from you. Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We heard from some Navajo officials at the beginning of the hour and also took a look back at one of the many stories we did on National Native News. We headed out to the area shortly after the spill and talk to many people in the community. I want to welcome back our guests. Joining us is Stella Benally. She's a local farmer. And also Maddie Hayden. Thank you for joining us today.
Okay.
And Maddie, right before we took the break, you were talking a little bit about the work that the New Mexico Environment Department has been doing. One of the questions being raised, I think, by listening to some of the folks is the water still safe?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that question, Antonia. So, you know, that is a piece of good news that I can share, that, you know, we have done extensive monitoring and continue to monitor the water quality in the San Juan and Animas in New Mexico, and it is safe for all uses, so for agriculture, for recreational use, for cultural use. We've also partnered with New Mexico State University to do research on crops that have been grown using, that have been irrigated using those rivers, and those crops are also safe to eat. But we understand that there's still some farmers are still facing a stigma from that. And that's something that we're really investing in educating about, that these crops are safe and healthy to eat.
Thank you for that. And let's go ahead and go to the phone lines, get your comments or your questions in right now. Don't wait till the end of the hour. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And I'd like to welcome Kenny Frost in, who's calling from Durango, Colorado, listening to us online today. Hello, Kenny.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for calling in. And Kenny, you are from the area. Tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of what you did when this spill had happened.
I am a Native American consultant, and when this spill happened in August of 2015, I was one of the first to photograph the spill at Weasel Skin Bridge, located on the Southern Ute Indian Reservation, just south of Ignacio. I was contacted by the Ute Rangers, who was also monitoring the spill, which just occurred in just below Silverton and the Sun Ute Tribe. Immediately, the Environmental Water Department immediately notified the state of New Mexico and Navajo Nation. Of course, they called Window Rock to notify them. And of course, with tribal administrations happening, that word didn't really hit the Shiprock chapter house immediately, so I notified Chili, my good friend, notified him of what was going on. And many of the river had turned a bright orange as I had photographed the river as it was making its way down into New Mexico, finally to Utah, and down all the way down to the Hoover Dam, where it finally dissipated. But as was mentioned by some of the speakers, that the contaminants in the river are still there today because they're heavy metal. And during that time, once the Shiprock farmers were notified of what the contaminants were within the river of the mill tailings, many of the people there on the Navajo who were farming their lands had lost a lot of their crops due to the contaminants, and believe it or not, are still suffering the effects of it, of the water today because of what had happened from the mining. And there are over 200 mining pits below Silverton, and some of them, there's still a couple of them that are in the danger aspect of ready to burst. And I believe at this time, due to the amount of rain that is occurring in southwest Colorado, that those mine areas are filling up. Some of the minerals or metals that are found within the river itself are zinc, lead, cadmium, copper, aluminum, and those are still within the water. A year later or a year and a half later, I went to Durango. They were opening up the river for recreational purposes. I photographed the river, and you could see a tint of orange and green within the river, yet people were playing in the river to raft down the river. So it was very, very dangerous. And the effects, the health effects that we are not seeing at this time and moment could have long-lasting effects 20 years from now when those people were playing in the river. Are they gonna combat cancer? Or other dreadful diseases? One of the most important things when we try to do this, as Chili had mentioned, that we try to get the president of Navajo Nation, Russell Brigade, to sign a documentation or letter for emergency help from the United States government. In the United States government, under the program to help disasters, natural disasters, there's, that program is set up. One is for regular people or big cities for natural disasters, and then there's another component, which is to help the Native American people in natural disasters. And had Russell signed that documentation, the United States government would have brought in huge portable water tanks, food, everything that the Navajo Nation needed in order to get by this emergency. And many Native tribes across this land don't realize that whenever they contact FEMA, that there's two components, one to help big cities and one to help Native American tribes. And that was the same thing we went through with Standing Rock during the fight to protect the water up there, that we also had trouble with the letter to get signed by the chairman of Standing Rock, because ultra-modern water equipment, clean water tanks, a portable kitchen, everything that you need to sustain a small community would have been brought into the chapter house of Shiprock, and Chili and myself were working hard on that to try to get Russo to do that. Of course, during that time, one of the things that we needed to do was to get fresh drinking water to the Navajo Nation. And so we put a call out to get people to come in to clean the water of the San Juan. And so we had a lot of fly-by-night people who brought their inventions to Navajo, and we looked at them, and at the end we got the price tag of hundreds of millions right. of dollars in order to clean up the water to get rid of the heavy metals. And so we didn't go there. Then the other thing that Chili and myself, we tried to get funding, again, we tried to work with Navajo because of the administration, to get a water plant there right at the Shiprock Chapter House or immediate area, because one of the things I researched is the Navajo Nation is not utilizing their water rights that is due to them in the Shiprock area. And one of the things I did, I contacted my tribe because we have our own water plant and we sell water to the municipality of Ignacio, Colorado, and we charge the town. There's nothing wrong with the Shiprock or the Navajo Nation also doing the same thing. And when we contacted the communities of Kirtland and the cities just north of Shiprock, they were willing to buy water from the Navajo Nation if this water plant was to be constructed and built, because that water would have been a state-of-the-art facility. The people who worked for the Southern Ute at the water plant would have came down and trained the Navajo employees to operate this water plant in order to help them to make sure that the water plant does produce and clean right. water for the Navajo Nation in the Shiprock Chapter area. And that was something that me and Chili had worked on along with, I went down to a number of meetings at the Shiprock Chapter House to meet with the citizens of the Chapter House area of Shiprock. And we tried our darnest to get things as well and, to get clean water to the people.
And it sounds like there, I remember there was a lot of moving parts going on, a lot of efforts to, get the clean water and also working with various levels of government, tribal, local, federal, national, and then even nonprofits. So hold on, Kenny, we want to take another call. Also, thank you so much for calling in, but hold your thoughts for a minute. Let's go to Nancy, who's calling us from Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening to us on KUNM.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say a few things on this. It happened when I was employed along with the contacting these patients or these people that were actually affected by the San Juan River. The organizations or the EPAs, we have no support from them. We had none. We actually had one meeting with one out of San Francisco, and they sent a junior personnel who just pretty much read off a script to us here to explain or to actually to calm the nerves of the residents along the Colorado River. And I'm not sure whoever was talking on the radio saying that they did the sampling, the water is safe. Does the person live along the water? Does the person utilize that water? No. This is just some information that I had gathered and helped as much as we could when we did the contact information with these residents. And as much as we were just thrust into this and had to explain to the people the water wasn't safe. However, the support from the EPA in San Francisco, we didn't get no support at all. I'm not sure, you know, this EPA stuff, if it works at all, because I know NTUA was hauling water to Hauchita. They only had one truck trucking all the water from Kayenta to support the community in Hauchita, Utah. And that was every day. This truck was going every day. I'm not sure it was nonstop. I don't know how many trips that person made. And I don't know if they even got reimbursed for it at all. You know, there's a lot of upsetting stuff that I saw that there was no support from the EPA. And the person is talking about getting samples in Albuquerque with the University of New Mexico. Yeah, they can say it's safe, but I want to ask that person directly, are you consuming these food? Are you utilizing those water? That's what I want to know.
Thank you so much, Nancy, for calling in from and joining the program today. And I'll go ahead and go ahead, Maddie, go ahead.
Yeah, so thanks for calling, Nancy. Thank you for the question. So, you know, I'm with the New Mexico Environment Department, and, you know, we agree with you that the EPA's response at the time was not perfect, certainly was not perfect. And so, like I said, we, the state and our community partners, mobilized to conduct that sampling, and we continue to do that sampling. And a lot of the sampling is done by not only NMED, but the community members and community organizations take those samples, and we all share data. So I just want to make that clear that, there are a variety of people and groups monitoring the water quality, and it is safe for the uses I mentioned.
And is there any website or information where people can go and look this up publicly?
Yes, absolutely. And I would be happy to share that with you to post online. All of our water quality monitoring data is posted online.
Okay, great. Well, we'll get that information and we'll put it on our Native America Calling Facebook page. And I want to thank you, Maddie, for joining us today. And also, Stella, we're getting to the end of the hour, so I just wanted to get your final thoughts.
I just wanted to see if there was any data done during that time for people that live along the river, if there was any type of sickness that came about. Because my issue was, like it happened during the uranium era, a lot of people weren't notified, you know, of what they were going through, like as far as their mining. So I was just, I just wanted to know if there was any data or any research done during that time when some people had utilized the water, like maybe from the sheep, they butchered the sheep or things like that. So that was my concern. And then I think if it does ever happen, I think there should be some type of pond, like a sediment pond put in on different areas of the farming so we can utilize that. If someone would say they're still mining out there in Colorado. So just to be out front that I think we should have some type of a pond for the farmers that we can utilize in the near future if it does ever happen again.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Stella Benally, a local farmer in the area, thank you for joining us this hour.
Thank you very much.
And also thank you to Maddie Hayden and for Dwayne Chili Yazzie and also Kenny Frost for calling in, and our other caller, Nancy. That's going to do it for our time here today, looking back at the Gold King Mine waste spill. And we'll find that information and we'll post it to our Facebook page. Find us at Native America Calling. You can always continue the conversation there or send us an email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And join us tomorrow. We're going to talk about tourism. And I know people have been home and they're looking forward to maybe going somewhere. And we're going to talk about COVID-19 as well. And so join us tomorrow. Thank you to our guests, our callers, the crew back at the studio putting this on air. And I'm your host, Antonia Gonzalez.
The Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention remind you, receiving the COVID-19 vaccination protects you, your family, and your community, and urge you to please contact your tribal or urban clinic to get your COVID-19 vaccination if you haven't already. More information at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus, who support this show.
Jangajit Jitnaran John Perkauzu, Jitnavig Miaturakan Akson, Kaputnik, Uping of Naku, Ayagnit Sakonaku, Kaputai King of Sigifkarako Nakimut Suit Tun, Parazugu InsureKidsNow.gov, Kotokoyaga Ruku 1877 Kids Now, Kanthut Kimuzvik Nijalil Rapakluku Healthcare.gov, Kotokoyaga Ruku 1-800-318-2596, Unakingunung Tokakan Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.